Good morning. It's Tuesday, April 28th, 2026, and this is the Acromegaly Update, your weekly briefing on the latest research in acromegaly, brought to you by Marea Therapeutics. It was a notably active week in the literature. We have five strong papers to walk through, spanning cardiovascular risk, biomarker-guided therapy, pituitary imaging, patient quality of life, and surgical outcomes. Let's get into it. Our first paper comes from Endocrine Reviews. That's the flagship review journal of the Endocrine Society, and it's a sweeping look at cardiovascular disease in acromegaly. The authors lay out just how central cardiac complications are to this condition. Excess growth hormone and IGF-1 don't just cause the classic physical features of acromegaly. They also drive structural changes in the heart, arrhythmias, vascular stiffness, and a cluster of metabolic risk factors including hypertension, diabetes, and dyslipidemia. What the review makes clear is that even when biochemical control is achieved through surgery or medication, many patients still carry significant cardiovascular risk that needs to be managed independently. The authors call for multidisciplinary care and individualized risk assessment as non-negotiables. In modern acromegaly practice, this is the kind of comprehensive reference that should be on every endocrinologist's reading list for the year. The second paper, from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, gets into the nuances of matching patients to the right medical therapy based on their tumor biology. Not all acromegaly tumors are alike, and that matters enormously for treatment. Tumors that are densely granulated tend to express high levels of SST2 receptors and respond well to first-generation somatostatin analogs like octreotide and lanreotide. Sparsely granulated tumors, on the other hand, overexpress SST5 relative to SST2, and they respond better to pasireotide, which has higher affinity for that receptor subtype. The key takeaway from this paper is that prospective studies have now shown biomarker-guided treatment selection actually outperforms standard one-size-fits-all approaches. The authors argue this level of precision should already be part of clinical practice, not something we're waiting on future guidelines to endorse. The third paper, also in JCEM, tackles a practical problem that affects every pituitary center: inconsistent imaging protocols. Despite macroadenomas still being the most common presentation, about 70% of somatotroph tumors, there's a growing trend toward detecting smaller adenoma earlier, and current imaging guidelines just aren't keeping pace. The authors propose a standardized, tiered MRI framework that incorporates modern magnetic resonance and functional imaging techniques, tailored to the individual patient and their anticipated treatment path. They even provide an online decision support tool. The lack of standardization across centers has been a real barrier to research comparability and optimal patient care, and this paper offers a concrete solution. Fourth, a paper that speaks directly to something biochemical endpoints often miss: how patients are actually doing. This JCEM review synthesizes data from clinical trials, cohort studies, and patient-reported outcome research to paint a detailed picture of life with acromegaly. Even after achieving biochemical remission, many patients continue to deal with fatigue, joint pain, sleep disturbances, and body image concerns. Depression and anxiety are prevalent, and on top of that, the treatments themselves carry burden: injection frequency, gastrointestinal side effects, financial strain, and relentless surveillance. The authors highlight a real disconnect between what the labs show and what patients experience, and they push for systematic incorporation of validated quality of life instruments into routine clinical care. Emerging oral therapies and longer-acting formulations may help reduce treatment burden down the road. but the comparative data aren't there yet. Our fifth paper rounds out the week with a retrospective study of 128 patients who underwent surgery for GH-secreting adenoma at a single center over 10 years. The central question was whether histological subtype, densely granulated, sparsely granulated, or mixed GH prolactin adenoma, predicts surgical remission. The short answer is, not significantly, though the trend favored densely granulated tumors. Sparsely granulated adenoma did show a pattern of lower remission rates, about 43% at 3 months versus 60% for densely granulated, and they tended to be diagnosed at a younger age, were larger, and expressed lower SST2 relative to SST5. Those receptor profiles are directly relevant to what happens after surgery, when medical therapy comes into play. So even if histological subtype doesn't cleanly predict surgical success, it absolutely informs the next step. Stepping back and looking at the week as a whole, there's a clear theme running through all five papers. Precision medicine is reshaping acromegaly care. Receptor profiling to guide drug selection. Standardized imaging to improve surgical planning. Patient-reported outcomes to fill the gaps biochemistry can't see. These are no longer aspirational ideas. They're increasingly evidence-backed practice. The cardiovascular review is a reminder that acromegaly is a systemic disease. And normalizing a hormone level doesn't mean the work is done. Looking ahead, the next frontier is almost certainly oral therapies. Paltusotine, an oral somatostatin receptor agonist, is being watched closely for its potential to eliminate injection burden entirely. If and when comparative quality of life data emerge from those trials, it could reshape the first-line medical management conversation in a meaningful way. That's your acromegaly update for Tuesday, April 28th. We'll be back next week with another digest. Thanks for listening.